And you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. And we come to you Fridays to talk politics with my co-host, Stephanie Grace of the Times-Picayune and New Orleans Advocate. Stephanie, how are you doing today?
Doing fine, thanks.
And coming up on the show today, we'll be speaking with Congressman Troy Carter from New Orleans after the House earlier today passed the Biden administration's Build Back Better bill. And later on the show, the music event NOLA by NOLA is going virtual. We'll speak with one of the producers, Paul Peck, about a special two-night virtual concert. Oh. But first, Stephanie, we're happy to have Ron Fauché join us on the Politics Roundtable. Ron is a well-known political analyst, pollster, writer, and president of the Claris Research Group. Ron, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you. Happy to join both of you.
So, Ron and Stephanie, let's get started by looking back at the elections in New Orleans. Obviously, we have several important runoffs that are happening, but I think one of the big questions to look at is the turnout. Ron, looking back at how this election has fared to previous ones, what do we know about how turnout looked and fared?
Well, turnout was I think, disappointingly low. Only 28% of registered voters cast ballots in the mayor's election. And when you look at the actual numbers, that's only 75,000 out of 267,000 eligible voters, which means an astounding 192,000 people didn't vote. And even though the mayor received a substantial and impressive 65% of the votes cast, she received fewer actual votes, about 48,750, than any mayor since T. Sims Walmsley 87 years ago. So the city, and this is a trend that has been going on. It didn't begin with the current mayor. It's gone on for some time, but the turnout continues to be less and less in city elections. And I think that raises some very troubling and disturbing questions that city officials need to deal with, you know, by staying home or New Orleans voters voting with their feet, you know, mm-hmm. and they opting out because they've lost hope and because they're frustrated, because they don't think they can make a difference. These are some fundamental things that I think New Orleans needs to deal with.
Right.
And this election, you know, was a disappointing backdrop to that.
I mean, sometimes it could mean that people just don't think there's anything competitive on the ballot, that it's kind of a foregone conclusion, which isn't necessarily negative, right?
Well, that can be true, but And I'm sure, you know, when people don't vote, there's multiple reasons. You know, there isn't just one reason.
Right.
You know, they're not just protesting one thing or one candidate or sending a message or just have better things to do that day. And so you're right. There's a lot of other things that could be a factor. But I think what we're seeing here is that the level of participation keeps going down. In the mayor's election 4 years ago, only 33% voted,
which was a competitive one,
and that was a competitive two primary race that started off without any clear frontrunner, you know, mm-hmm. and of course in this race, even though the mayor's race wasn't competitive, the mayor was a major figure looming over the election, and whether you liked her or disliked her, you had an opportunity to cast, if nothing else, a protest vote or a vote, you know, affirming your approval of her. And on top of that, you know, we had five of the seven city council seats were competitive.
Right. And of course, the sheriff race and the
Sheriff's
clerk race.
And the clerk of court and constitutional amendments. So you've had a lot of reasons for people to vote, and this all comes after, you know, the pandemic has raised a lot of questions about the strength of the city's economy, and that's a serious question that everybody has to deal with, you know, and the hurricane, you know, brought out a lot of things, a lot of problems. The garbage collection is one of them, And so it was ripe for an election with more participation, perhaps more protest. And the fact that there wasn't more was, I think that's something that needs to be looked at and thought about.
What do you make of the fact that we had two incumbent district council members, one with an asterisk because of the DWI, who lost the at-large race, two city incumbents in district races who were forced into runoffs, the sheriff forced into a runoff? I mean, do you think that's a sign of kind of voter discontent?
Well, I think the, some of the choices that voters are given may be a sign of discontent, but I'm not sure that race was. Just when you look at it, to be honest with you, if Jared Brissett had not had the most recent DWI situation, I'm not sure he would have received many less votes than he got anyway, even mm-hmm. after he did have it. He got more than I think most people expected him to, mm-hmm. which to some extent was probably something of a protest against the other two candidates who both were attacking one another. But I always felt that J.T. Morrell was the favorite in the race, and so I'm not sure the results of that really spoke much to that. But I think Stephanie does make a good point. The fact that what was it, about 17% of the voters voted for a candidate who didn't have a campaign and they had never heard of, and mm-hmm. the candidate who basically got out of the election was the mark of, some protest. But of course, even though the mayor got 65% of the vote against candidates that the vast majority of the people in the city didn't know, there was still 35% who voted against her, and those were protest votes because they knew those votes wouldn't matter in the end, but they were protest votes.
Mm-hmm. And again, you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden, along with co-host Stephanie Grace, and we're speaking with Ron Fauché. Ron, when you think about a low turnout election, what are the implications for the issues that get discussed? Is there the same? You mentioned, there were issues that people could vote on, from crime to the garbage collection to other issues. Is it your sense that when you have not only a low turnout race, but the expectation of a low turnout race, that there isn't going to be the same robust discussion of issues that voters should be engaged about?
Well, I think that is true to some extent. One thing we've learned over the years is that political campaigns are lousy forum for serious discussion of issues. We're always hoping there is serious discussion mm-hmm. of issues, but usually...
And we're always disappointed, aren't we?
Yeah, we're always disappointed, and it's all short. And look, that's presidential elections, city elections, state elections.
Sure.
But the one thing that I do find troubling with the New Orleans situation now, and I think some of the candidates for the city council, certainly for mayor, including the incumbent, have fallen short on, is, the city really doesn't have a vision as to where it's going. And if you don't have a vision, you're not going to have a plan to get there, and you're not going to have anything implemented. And we have to decide, what is city government supposed to do? What are the core services? What are the priorities? Where should the money go? The city's actually sitting on a pretty good bit of one-time money right now mm-hmm. that can be used for multiple things, particularly, infrastructure and one-time projects. I'm not seeing the kind of integrated, coordinated plan for drainage and water quality, or for streets and sidewalks, or how does all this fit with building a city's economy and addressing poverty and other important issues for the city. And I find that troubling, and I think a low turnout election just exacerbates that type of thing.
Can I ask a little bit of a different subject? But you mentioned water and sewer. We got news this week that Mitch Landrieu, the former mayor, is going to be the, I guess, infrastructure czar for the Biden infrastructure bill. Wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, Mitch is certainly well positioned for that because, number one, he served in state government as a legislator, lieutenant governor, and he served in city government as mayor.
And was involved in the Katrina kind of negotiations for federal aid.
Exactly, and was in the middle, of the Katrina, recovery situation in a city with a lot of infrastructure needs. So from a state and local perspective, he has a lot of background there. And that's important, I think, for this federal infrastructure program. The one thing that concerns me about it is, and it needs to concern him too, actually, and I don't know how he's dealing with that or how the administration's going to deal with it, but anytime you hire a sort of a czar to kind of coordinate things that involve multiple departments, how will that be coordinated? Is it just going to be kind of a chaotic mess where they all want to have their agendas and everybody's fighting one another? Or will they, in fact, really legitimately work together and let Mitch Landry do his job? And I think that's yet to be seen because we've seen a lot of examples of that with the federal government over the years, and it doesn't always work out very well. Mm-hmm. And so I hope Mitch has positioned himself and has talked to the president about that. And, already there's talk about, Pete Buttigieg, who's Secretary of Transportation, right, who could be a strong candidate for president in the future. Whether he gets credit for it, or Mitch gets credit for it, or the Secretary of this gets credit for it, or the Vice President gets credit for it.
Transportation,
energy. And let's hope that isn't. Yes, of course, EPA, energy, all the environmental issues. And so let's hope that isn't a problem. Over the years, I have gotten less and less, I've had less and less faith in the federal government actually performing and doing its job competently. So I look at everything with a wary eye, and I hope Mitch is in a position to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. And Ron, as someone who is has their pulse on local state surveys of where voters are right now, I mean, what is your sense? We saw these elections in New Jersey and Virginia. We're talking about a low turnout election here in New Orleans. I mean, what is your sense of where the American voter is right now in terms of this place and time?
Well, I think the American voter is split. You have the Trump voter that, came out with almost 47% in the last election. And you had the Biden voter who came out and voted for Biden, but mostly against Trump. But that was a little over 51.5%, and a few percent in the middle. So the electorate is certainly split. I think what's happening now is that the Trump voters are united 100% against President Biden, and the polls certainly show that, and that's no great surprise. But I think what's happened is a lot of the independents, the people in the middle, the cross-pressured voter, who elected Biden, they also elected Donald Trump 4 years before. But I think those voters are very concerned and sort of turned off right now to President Biden and the Democratic Congress for a whole variety of reasons. A lot of people voted for Biden because they wanted to get rid of Donald Trump and the chaos of his administration. But they didn't necessarily endorse so many of the policies that Biden, even though he proposed a lot of these before he was elected, and people had an opportunity to know about him, but they didn't necessarily see their vote as a mandate for that. I also think the Afghanistan situation really hurt his credibility.
Yeah,
and I think he's still suffering.
Do you think? I wonder. I look at these, and obviously we had the vote this morning in the House on the kind of second soft infrastructure bill. A lot of these policies in both of the infrastructure bills poll very highly. But then, you know, they get kind of talked about in terms of however many trillions, and then that scares people. I mean, do you think kind of in the end, once programs start getting going, they will become more popular?
Well, Stephanie, you're 100% right about what's happened. And I think the Democrats made a big strategic error, and they continue to make that error. And the error was, as you said, they came up with a price tag of the program. And the program was interchangeable, and different people had different ideas about what should be in it. And they still do. Even though the House passed something, it's possible the Senate will pass the bill, but it's also likely that it won't be the same bill.
Right.
And I think the Democrats made a fundamental mistake in not breaking the bill up into maybe five or six different things. You know, when Franklin Roosevelt passed the New Deal, it wasn't all one omnibus bill that they passed with one vote. It was, 30 or 40 different bills. When Lyndon Johnson, in the Great Society era, passed bills, anti-poverty bills and aid to education and housing bills and civil rights bills and voting rights bills, they were all separate bills. And the point here is that if they are, in fact, popular, as polls indicate, many of these individual programs are popular.
I mean, parental leave, absolutely popular.
Right.
Yeah. Why not just focus on individual bills, go sell them to the American people, and if the Republicans, and if they are popular and can stand on their own, then you may be able to get some Republican votes for them. If you can't get Republican votes, then that may be their problem
right
in the next election.
Well, Ron, we're going to have to wrap it up there, but we really want to thank you for joining us today on Louisiana Considered.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's Ron Fauché. He's a political analyst, pollster, and president of the Claris Research Group, and this is Louisiana Considered. And speaking of the Build Back Better bill, we're now going to listen to a conversation that was recorded with Congressman Troy Carter earlier this morning talking about passage of that bill and what it means. And the first question I asked him was about the significance of former New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu being tapped by the Biden administration to oversee the infrastructure spending. How do you think this might help our region with having a former New Orleans mayor in charge of it?
I think it demonstrates that Louisiana is in the House, literally in the White House. The significance of having Cedric Richmond as the senior advising him on a daily basis, advising him, having now Mitch Landrieu, our former mayor and former lieutenant governor, serving as the czar for infrastructure, overseeing the infrastructure package, is huge. Particularly huge for New Orleans and the entire state of Louisiana. Here's a guy who served as mayor for 8 years, served in the House of Representatives, and proud to say I served with him as a member of the House, and served as lieutenant governor. I mean, he certainly understands the terrain. He understands the language. He has the skill sets. And quite naturally, being from Louisiana is a huge, huge advantage for the people of Louisiana. Having someone that knows the issues firsthand, the things that worked, and quite frankly, things that didn't work so well. An opportunity to go back and rework them and to fix them, like sewage and water board or the airport or many of our own roads and bridges throughout, will be greatly served having someone with Mitch's institutional knowledge.
And Congressman, and this morning the House passed President Biden's Build Back Better bill. Obviously, it goes to the Senate, where it faces a more uncertain fate. But tell us about this Build Back Better bill and what you see are the key parts to it.
Well, you know, the Build Back Better bill is transformative. It gives us an opportunity to invest in combating climate crisis that we have, $555 billion to deal with. The issue of sustainability, of making sure that we are taking care of flooding issues, making sure that we're taking care of the threat of climate change and the threat of harmful emissions that go into to the air that make it difficult for people to to enjoy the benefit of a job within industry because they're literally dying to have the jobs. And this gives us an opportunity to create that coexistence, gives us an opportunity to make the largest investment in early childhood education, having universal pre-K, giving all of our young people an opportunity for a fair and an honest shot at building the foundations of a strong education. Man, this changes the world. You want to talk about a game changer? When we do what we've talked about for many years but haven't been able to do, and that is invest in early childhood education, universal pre-K will give all of our children an opportunity to do what foreign countries have done long before. They've invested in the formative years of their young people, and it pays huge dividends in their academic success in later lives. Making sure that we're addressing issues for our senior citizens and people who are struggling to pay for their insulin or to pay for their prescription drugs or to have access to health care. I mean, these are all measures that are huge. When we close the loophole on the Medicare issue where more and more people now have the opportunity to have even greater beyond what the Affordable Care Act provided because we strengthened it, I can go on and on and on about the incredible benefits that it does. You know, pulling families out of poverty. We talk about the child income tax credit. I mean, this is real dollars in the pockets of families to benefit children. Now we're rebuilding families. We're building communities. We rebuild communities. We rebuild states. When we rebuild states, we rebuild America. It's truly a great day. And I know this is only halftime. I know that we're leading going into halftime. But we still got another half of this game to play, and that's why we have to now zero in on our conversations with our senators to make them understand that while there are things that can be deemed partisan, there are things that can be deemed ideological differences, and I respect that. None of this is caring for the American people and making sure that we're providing for them is something that we should be able to table our differences on and find a way to get to yes. So I'd encourage all of our listeners, all of your listeners, all of the viewers out there, pick up the phone. Call the U.S. senators, not just the ones in Louisiana. Call them. There's 100. Call them all. Send them emails and texts. Communicate with them on social media. Let them know that the American people are watching and we're expecting great things from both chambers, not just the House, but also the Senate.
Congressman Troy Carter, thank you so much for joining us today.
God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
And you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. That's going to wrap up our show for today. Stephanie Grace, want to thank you for joining us today.
Of course.
Hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
And also want to thank...
Early voting starts right after Thanksgiving.
That's right.
Can you mention that?
That's right. Also want to thank Ron Fauché, who joined us earlier in the show, and Congressman... Troy Carter, who was also on the show. Coming up next, we'll have some NPR news, and we're hearing that Kyle Rittenhouse has been found not guilty on all counts in the trial in Kenosha, Wisconsin. NPR will be covering this all day, so stay tuned here on WWNO and WRKF for coverage of that. And you can also go to our websites, WWNO.org and WRKF.org. Again, Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty on all counts. This just crossed the wires a couple minutes ago here. And you can find all of the episodes of Louisiana Considered by going to our websites, wwno.org, wrkf.org, or go to your favorite podcasting platform. You can search for Louisiana Considered and subscribe so you can get all of the episodes to your phone or however you listen to your podcasts. Have a great weekend.